Lost my camera there. A great start. Welcome in. Let me know if you can hear me. Welcome in the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, it's been too long. This show doesn't run without you once a week.
Mike, I saw that cousin Shane get his own YouTube. I take a week to finish the magazine, and Shane's like going off on his own. Next, you're going to tell me he's like the CEO of Cracker Barrel or something. Oh, man, it is so good to be back. I missed talking some ball with you and the cousins last week. We were on deadline for the Athlon Sports College Football Magazine. So I'm glad to not have the deadline gorilla kind of hanging over me all week.
Yeah, no doubt. And I will say, Stephen, yes, the portal, to my knowledge, is closed in college. You know, who knows? They always change the rules seemingly by the minute. But if cousin Shane ever jumps in the portal, Cracker Barrel is taking him in a heartbeat. I'll just let you know, the graphic is already made. Shane is, he's got one foot out the door. He's headed to Cracker Barrel if he can get it. You know what?
Maybe he should do like one of those, you know, like a recruit video where he's got like three or four places in the mix. He's going to go sample them, and he can have a big commitment and video announcement at Cracker Barrel.
Well, I'll just put in my crystal ball now, Stephen. It's Cracker Barrel or bust for old cousin Shane. Well, it's also, Stephen, gifting or bust to the legend JR. He just gifted another membership. Steven, and I don't know if you've heard these yet, but
legend cousin JR has done it again. The legend cousin JR has done it again.
Appreciate you, JR. He's just gifted a membership to cousin Jesse Sewell, big Gamecock out there. So, Jesse, welcome to the family, courtesy of the legend JR. I'm just wondering, you know, what do we got to do here? Thanks to JR once again that he did that. So he's a big dog, Steven. So we got a topic we're going to get into here. Biggest questions remaining for every SEC team post spring. But before we do that, Steven, we got to start with this news. We got to do it for cousin JR. Again, big dog here. Georgia just landed a commitment five-star quarterback, Jared Curtis from Nashville, number one quarterback in the 2026 recruiting cycle, according to the On3 composite, and I believe he's the number six overall prospect in the country. So, man, the dogs, the rich just keep getting richer. You know what, Stephen?
Mike, I was going to say it's about time something went right for Georgia. I mean, no, in all seriousness, Mike, I mean, what a huge get for Georgia, not only for Georgia to land a talent like Curtis, but also I think he's going to be like the most highly recruited quarterback by stars since Justin Fields at Georgia. So, you know, you look at all the you know, defensive talent, all the everything that Kirby brings in, and now they could have an elite quarterback to go with that. So, I mean, just the continuation of I think the best program in college football right now by landing a quarterback like this. No real surprise with all the resources and sort of the recruitment that it's been, but just another big moment for Georgia and Kirby Smart as they get a big time quarterback for next year.
Yeah. And shout out to cousin Ken. He said, well, Curtis was the one getting richer, which is true. Rumor has, again, I don't know this for sure. Hopefully I'm going to have a great Georgia insider in studio this week. So we'll get to the bottom of it, but the rumor has it, Curtis getting around $2.5-3 million from Georgia. Wait, again, this is all legal. You know, this is legal NIL here I'm talking. But does that tell you anything, Stephen? If in fact true, I don't know for certain, but if Georgia's spending millions of dollars on a high school quarterback, which again, all these schools are doing, I'm not calling out Georgia. But what's interesting to me, Stephen, is to my knowledge, up until this point, Georgia has been not all in on spending money. And then again, this is not a negative on the quarterback, but I'm looking at it more of from a Kirby Smart, a program level. What does it tell you that Georgia is going all in and spending this kind of money on a very, very promising quarterback, but one that is unproven at the college level?
I think you could take a couple different angles to this. I think one is Georgia probably feels he's going to be pretty special. And I think just based upon some of the highlights and some of the things that I've read, it's hard to really doubt that. The other thing is, this is where it is in college football. Like, if you want to be the elite of the elites, if you want to win national championships, you have to play in the same sandbox as everybody else. If, you know, whatever the number is about Texas's roster, whether it's 30, you know, 35 million, 40, counting rev share, whatever it is, like, this is the new standard in college football. And, you know, transfer quarterbacks, you know, Brett Beck was 4 million. Darian Mensah looks like it's about 4 million for Duke. That's kind of the going rate for these quarterbacks these days. So I think it's smart for Georgia. If he's your guy, you believe in him, you do whatever you got to do to land him. And I think at the same time, I sort of, if Georgia is going all in, the stars already say he's going to be good. I kind of trust the evaluation here of Kirby Smart and staff, because I don't think they'd be throwing around a bunch of NIL money just for the heck of it here.
No, I don't think so either. And they beat out Oregon to land Curtis. So, you know, again, I don't know for a fact, but when you see Oregon attached, when you see Miami attached, these guys aren't coming for free. I'll just put it that way. You know what?
Definitely any recruitment involving, I think, Miami and Oregon, the first thing you think about is what kind of NIL is going to be attached to that, given that they are two of the better players in that space. So I would imagine Georgia's offer, whatever it was relative to that, was either very competitive or just as good as those guys, which is a good sign for Georgia.
Yeah. Right. And throw, of course, Texas into there, too. I mean, heck, all these schools that are competing. Hey, shout out Cousin Brad. He just gifted a membership. Steven, this time to Tunka Todd. Tunka, welcome to the family, courtesy Cousin Brad. And we even got this too, Steven.
Welcome to the family.
and all these sound effects, I should keep giving this guy a shout out. It's a different Cousin JR, I believe. I don't think it's the same JR, but that'd be classic if it was. But man, he sounds just like the ESPN. Yeah, doesn't he?
I was going to say, what kind of NIL deal does this fancy announcer guy have on for that SEC podcast here?
Oh, he provided all these free of charge. So thank you, Cousin JR. And JR's, I'm probably going to name my firstborn JR after all these JRs are coming through. You know what?
You know, what's the guy's name? Was it Michael Buffer? Goes up like any kind of, like, he's made a, like, it's amazing he's made a career of just being this announcer guy who just shows up. It's like, whether it's like the F1 race in Vegas or all these other places, wrestling, I mean, where boxing, it's just, I don't know, amazing that you can make a career out of having that kind of, a specialty.
Yep. All right. So, hey, we're going to get into here in just a second, biggest remaining question marks after spring football for every single team. But I wanted to throw this your way here, Steven. We got, these are post-spring record predictions. Shane and I, that was a topic we did last night. I'm just wondering, we don't have to go through all 16 or anything, and these are just my personal opinion, but I'm just kind of curious, Steven, any of these jump out to you that maybe you would really agree with, or any of these you're like, Mike, you are a damn idiot. There's no way insert team is going here. Do any of these jump out to you at all, Steven?
Mike, I think the first thing that jumps out to me is we're pretty much in agreement on the tiers. I think the Texas, Georgia, Alabama, LSU, that's kind of the consensus top tier in the SEC. And I think you could move them around a little bit. I think where the intrigue is that 5 through like 12. Like, I think you're going to get a lot of different opinions this offseason on that tier, which is why it stands out to me that you've got South Carolina at 7-5. I know this team has a difficult schedule. I just cannot get the end of last season's run with Lenora Sellers and his development out of my mind. So I think 7-5 is a little low. That being said, I am a little bit worried about some of the positions that we'll talk about on tonight's show about where they are going into 2025. That's really the only one that stands out to me, though. I think you guys are pretty close to kind of where I would project the SEC this season.
Mm-hmm. So, again, this is not Steven's predictions or anything like that, so don't throw it on him, but not even not too high. Oklahoma, Florida, I've been hearing that a lot. A&M, you're comfortable with the 9-8 range for those type teams?
I am. I am buying stock in Oklahoma. I think that they are a top 25 team, and I think they might be a little bit undervalued right now in some of the markets. I mean, they're about 6.5 at the over under. They've upgraded massively on offense. I love the Jaden Ott pickup to go with John Mateer. It might be the most chaotic, crazy backfield in the SEC for next season. Also, I would think that they pretty much bottomed out on offense. You only have room to go up. So I think, yes, the schedule is difficult, and it also gets at the – there's a lot of toss-up games, like South Carolina, Ole Miss, like what do you feel about Missouri? That middle tier of the SEC, again, is where I think you're going to see some kind of varying opinions. But I'm buying Oklahoma. I think Florida could be a playoff contender this year. I think when you look at that second tier, I think like Tennessee trying to figure out what are they now with Joey Aguilar? The schedule's pretty favorable, which kind of insulates them, I think, from a deeper drop in the SEC standing. So no real disagreements, Mike. I think the only one I would say is South Carolina at 7-5 feels too low. Mississippi State at 5-7 might be a little optimistic, but I would maybe only go like 4-8 or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Stephen. And again, I probably should have had you prepared for these questions that just pop into my head, but let's say that third row, which I got Tennessee 8-4, Mizzou 8-4, South Carolina 7-5, Auburn 7-5. Which one of those four, not that you're guaranteeing it, not that you're predicting it here, but if one of those teams was to make the college football playoff, which one would you most believe out of Tennessee, Missouri, South Carolina, or Auburn would make the college football playoff this season?
That's a really good question. I would probably take South Carolina just because I think there's another level that Lenora Sellers can get to. I do think the schedule for Missouri, though, is really favorable. Now, there are some toss-up games that come on the road, and that kind of, I think, is why the markets have them at 7.5 in the win total. So there's some trickier games maybe than on first glance. But I think if it's hard to run back what happened last season if you're South Carolina, but if you can replicate that plus some growth by Sellers and you fill in some of those positions, South Carolina seems like the one team with that schedule that I think can make the playoff. I'm not selling Tennessee stock, but I think given the question marks at the quarterback spot, I think it's probably going to be difficult to get back. With Auburn, complete wild card. It would not shock me at all if they finish in the top 25. It would not shock me at all if they are sitting there at 7-5 or 6-6 at the end of the year. It feels like they have the widest variance of that middle tier, maybe in the SEC this season.
Mm-hmm. And then similar question, but this one's just aimed to get you nothing but in trouble here, Stephen. The second row, Oklahoma, Florida, A&M, Ole Miss. Again, I got the first three, 9-3. I got Ole Miss 8-4. And you could convince me to put Ole Miss 9-3 and any of these others at 8-4. Of those four, which one would surprise you the least? They missed a bowl game. Oklahoma, Florida, A&M, Ole Miss. You know, things go sideways, and Steven's like, "Man, I should have saw it coming." Which one is the most believable would lose or not make the postseason?
I'm going to contradict myself here, so I'd probably go Oklahoma. As much stock as I'm buying, it would not shock me with that schedule. Also, shout out to Michigan for the creative coach suspension to make sure Sherrow Moore was on the sidelines for the Oklahoma game. Just given the difficult schedule and the new pieces like OC, quarterback, offensive line, running back, what if it doesn't come together? What if they just miss Danny Stutzman and Billy Bowman that much on defense? I don't think they will. But what if the offense just doesn't hit like we think? Mateer struggles more against SEC competition. Much like Auburn, it feels like Oklahoma's sort of variance this year is very wide. Like they could finish 9-3. They could also finish like 6-6. You know, if things really go wrong, like injuries, then they're sweating out a bowl bid. I don't think that's the case, but I think out of all those teams, given their schedule and new pieces, they make me worry the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, well. That's all I got on that one.
You mind if I throw out what I was curious? What's the why the 7-5 for South Carolina?
Well, we're going to get into that in the biggest questions, but I just think that we're all getting caught up a little. Here's the deal, Steven, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but we do this every offseason. We're like, if a quarterback's back, we're like, oh, we're golden. We got it. We're on the rise. And again, Laurie Sellers may be the best quarterback in the conference, so maybe there is reason to do that. But I don't know. I still question the weapons around him in terms of tight end, in terms of receiver. I know they got Nick Harbor. I really like Mazio Bennett. But again, are those guys fully developed receivers? They could be. But are they today? I can't swear to it. I think losing Rocket Sanders, I mean, he was just so pivotal to what they were doing on the offensive side of the football. I think that is underrated. They're losing a lot on the interior of the offensive line. And boy, I haven't even got to the defense yet, Steven, where they're replacing every linebacker of significance. They're replacing three starters on the defensive line that all are draft picks. And then they had a safety that was drafted high in the second round. So can South Carolina replace all that? I don't know. I think that's one of the biggest question marks in the SEC. Now, most of those guys I just referenced, if not all, maybe Rocket Sanders, none of them came in as like these elite prospects that, you know, South Carolina's landed some elite prospects. So they have proven, this coaching staff, that they can develop at an elite level and get three-star players to be high-round NFL draft picks. They're going to have to do it again, I think, though, if they're going to do any better than 7-5. And one other thing that I think is being completely overlooked with South Carolina, and I don't even know how much stock to put into this, but we all get enamored with Beamer Ball, right? Oh, special teams, Beamer Ball. They weren't that great last year. And why not? I think because Pete Limbo's gone. Mm-hmm. So he's gone again, obviously, and they're replacing literally everybody, kicker, punter, snapper, holder, everybody off the special teams units at South Carolina. So I think we may have gone from Beamer Ball, elite special teams, to special teams, a little bit of a question mark. And not even a little bit. I think it's a major question mark. So it may be a weakness. I'm not guaranteeing it's a weakness, but I don't know. There's just a lot of unknowns with South Carolina, which, again, I say all that, and I picked them to go 7-5. So I still think they're going to win more than they lose. I'm just not ready to say this is a playoff type program. Does that make sense?
It does. I think it is very easy to get enamored with the talent of Lenore Sellers. I mean, he could end up being the best quarterback in college football if he develops as expected. But it's also, you have to be careful to not overrate that in comparison to some of the holes on the roster, like you said. And also, should note, Rasul Faison, the running back transfer they brought in, has not been guaranteed an extra year for next season. So, I mean, if he does not get it, that's another loss, because you're counting on him to sort of team with Oscar Attaway. So I think, and I will admit to this too, like as we're sitting here talking, I'm sort of like second guessing some of the, like where they might be ranked at in our magazine, but it is very easy to get enamored with the finish and Sellers and think they can replicate that. I think we've seen many times, it is not always easy to just run that back and also run it back in the SEC against this type of schedule.
Right. And we didn't even mention new offensive coordinator,
right?
Dal Loggins, the head coach now. Again, how much was he really involved? I don't know. It'll bear itself out this season, I really do think. But again, just a lot of uncertainty there for me.
Also, a little different expectation going into the season for South Carolina, too. You know, they're not going to sneak up on people. They will be, like, the hunted. They will be among the top-tier teams in the SEC. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing or whether it matters, I think having extra expectations on you is a little different than going into the season thinking if you make a bowl game, it's a good thing, and then they're surging in the month of November and nearly making the playoff. It's a totally different vibe and expectation for the South Carolina this year.
Right, and every season, is just because of what's happened in the past, it guarantees nothing. But how soon we forget, Steven, at the end of 22, I mean, everybody remembers beating Tennessee and beating Clemson, but, you know, there was a ton of hype with South Carolina entering 23.
Yeah.
They had beaten two, they knocked two teams out of the playoff. And fans were saying, all right, we turned the corner. and they took a major step back. So again, I'm not, that means nothing for 2025, but they have to prove consistency before we just guarantee that they'll do it like we may do with a Georgia or an Alabama, if that makes sense.
I think you bring up something that's even more important now than in previous seasons, is that every year is totally different. And it's even more so in the portal era when rosters are so much, like there's so much turnover, there's so much change, that it's even more of a, like, you can't forget about last year and what's happened in recent trends, but even more so it's about, and you know, coaches have said this, like it is more about putting together the best possible team for this year and not necessarily worrying about 2026 and 2027. You're just worried about this year. So teams' fortune can change fairly quickly in this era of the portal. It's also why I think, and I say this to remind myself, we should be very careful about not overrating what happened last year. We shouldn't forget about it, but also keep in mind that rosters are way more volatile and have way more change than ever before. And it's something that, as we were talking for our magazine, we had to keep reminding ourselves that, just keep in mind, this team has 60-something new players on it. What happened last year, it really doesn't matter all that much when you have this much change. So just something I think to keep in mind, that volatility and change is probably going to be a staple of this college football season.
Yeah, and to further your point, again, you got to credit Beamer and company for developing all these guys, right? But
yeah,
in this new age, what does Steven just say? And this is echoed by all the coaches. It's a year-by-year proposition. So If Shane Beamer and company were out, they were elite of developing talent the last 2-3 years. And the draft just bears that out. That, I hate to say it, but that guarantees you nothing for 25. Because
right,
the guys that maybe they were developing people, and they're like, well, I need more snaps, or I'm getting paid a little bit more, I'm gone. And then you had, and they've done an excellent job also of identifying players in the portal. And we got to credit them for developing them as well, like Kyle Kinnard, like a Josh Simon, like a Rocket Sanders. I mean, the list goes on and on. They've nailed a lot of those. But can you do that every year? I'm not doubting them, but that's not a guarantee either.
I would trust teams more that recruit at a higher level, I think. And not saying it's easy to keep those good backups in the program now in the portal era because of all the NIL and the ability to go start somewhere else. But I think it's a little bit easier to run it back if you're recruiting in the top 10. I think it's a little bit harder because of where your baseline is if you're like a top 25, 30-ish type recruiter, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense to me. I hope the Cousins get it. But before we get too into the weeds here, let's go. I mean, we got 16 teams we're going to hit on here, Steven. Biggest remaining question marks after spring practice. And I don't know about you, Steven, but I still got tons of questions about nearly all these teams because the access is so limited and because they're going, a lot of these programs are going to OTA style. So I think they're trying to keep information to the bare minimum, and that has, you know, thoughts and prayers to you for putting together this Athlon magazine. I don't know how you do it, but where would you like to start? We can go in any random order you'd like.
Mike, what if we start with Ole Miss? I think it's a good team to start. There's a lot of, speaking of change and turnover, start in Oxford.
Okay. So what's your biggest question mark for Ole Miss post-spring football?
I am wondering about the line of scrimmage rebuild for Ole Miss. Obviously, there is a ton of hype for Austin Simmons, and rightfully so. I think Simmons plus the receivers for Ole Miss are going to be very good this year. But I think we saw this last year. One of the reasons that Ole Miss got to the doorstep of the playoff was how good they were on the defensive front. I mean, they were first in the SEC in rush defense, first in the SEC in sacks. Walter Nolan, Ivy, Pegues, Princely, they're all gone. Offensive line, lose four starters. They also averaged under 4 yards a carry in SEC games. So I think in order to set up Austin Simmons for success, that offensive line's got to settle. And on the defensive side of the ball, with all the turnover in the secondary, they've got great linebackers with Daugherty and Perkins. but you've got to wonder how that line of scrimmage rebuild is going to go. So for me, it's offensive and defensive lines.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting, Stephen, because mine is a little different, but kind of go hand in hand. And for me, it's who's going to run the football. Because, yeah. Again, everybody's enamored with Austin Simmons. I hear nothing but great things about him. He's going to win 3 Heisman trophies. And, you know, they're going to break the rules so he can stay as long as he wants. And just they're going to get waivers like they couldn't for Jackson Dart. But he's that good, Stephen. But, and Lane Kiffin, he's a quarterback whisperer, right? But they run the football. They run it, run it, run it. That's their bread and butter. They run it to open up the pass. It feels like down in Oxford. So, who are they going to get to run this football? They got Logan Diggs back. He only played in 1 game, I believe, last year after transferring in from LSU. Dominic Thomas had 197 yards. But if you're leaning on him, I think you're probably in trouble. I know they love the Mizzou transfer, Kywin Lacy. And then they had a guy come spring football. He said, all right, I'm out of here. So he clearly wasn't it. Then they had to add Troy running back Damian Taylor. I'm not questioning these guys, they have to run the football, but I'm just wondering, who's it going to be? Is it going to be a committee? And they were seriously lacking a physical presence at running back after losing Judkins so much. They had to use the big defensive lineman last year. I mean, that was comical how they tried to do that, but I think it blew up on them. And the only other thing, I just thought this was interesting. I believe they lead the SEC, Stephen, with 9 transfers from within the SEC. So they love getting these SEC guys. And I tend to believe that will lead to transfers that are ready for the level of competition they're going to get. I just wanted to throw that little caveat in there. But it kind of goes hand in hand with what you're talking about on the line of scrimmage, because if they don't get that solved, I don't really care who they got to run the ball. It's not going to work if they can't block.
No, I think that, speaking of like things we need to keep reminding ourselves, is like, as much as we get enamored with Jackson Dart and Trey Harris and Jordan Watkins catching passes and Caden pre-scoring, the bread and butter still is the run game. I mean, even Lane Kiffin, like back to FAU, Devin Singletary played in the NFL, one of the nation's top rushers. And we saw this with Ole Miss before. I mean, you've got to be able, as basic as it sounds, to run the ball. So I think that is a fair question. I think there is some nice upside with Logan Diggs and Damian Taylor, potentially the 1-2. Taylor was very productive at Troy. How does it translate to the SEC? But I think in general, there's just a lot of new here for Ole Miss. And I think figuring out how these pieces put together, you don't want to put too much on the young quarterback. But at the same time, with all of the question marks everywhere else, he's going to have to play a pretty big role in this offense and team right away, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And then if huge if here, because they've established themselves, Stephen, Ole Miss is, I mean, if they 8 wins is a bad year down there, you know, they're winning 11, they're winning 10. People are going to say, is Kiffin doing too many podcasts? I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there. All right.
He needs to come on that SEC podcast first, and then they can start making that argument, right?
Yeah. All right. Where are you going, Steven? Let's do, how about LSU? And I'm just going with them because I'm dreaming about this LSU-Ole Miss matchup that we're going to be getting here in a couple months that could determine the fate of both of these teams. But what's your biggest question mark for the Tigers?
I think my biggest question is, can the defense, or is the defense ready to take the next step? It's the second year under Blake Baker. You would think now you've had another offseason to gel, figure this out, that they would be acclimated to do so. They gave up 6 yards of play in SEC games last year. That can't happen again if LSU wants to make the playoff. But they've added improvements in pieces to pretty much each level. You know, Whit Weeks, I'm not spoiling anything here, he'll be one of our preseason All-Americans. But you've got, you know, transfers coming in on the defensive line and Patrick Payton. You've got, you know, Delaney, the Virginia Tech transfer at corner. AJ Halsey, who they just added from Houston, is a big time get at safety. He was one of the top safeties in the portal in the spring. So they have the pieces. How do you use Harold Perkins? It feels like this offense for LSU is in pretty good shape, despite the change in the offensive line. But if LSU's going to contend for the SEC title, it seems like to me that the biggest question that has to be resolved is the defense just ready to take that next step?
Yeah. You may be 100% right, but I figured you were going to go there as well. So I mixed it up, Steve, and I went with the offensive coaching staff, because remember last year, I never seen Brian Kelly with a play sheet in his hand. Of course, you know, I've not been following him at all his Notre Dame years, but I don't recall him ever doing that at LSU. I saw him do it last year, Steven. And I, you know, as the draft got here, you heard more and more about, why didn't they utilize Mason Taylor? Wait a second. They had an offensive tackle, went, what, sixth overall in the NFL. Emory Jones went pretty high too, as well, if I recall. They, you know, I think there's real questions. While everybody's got their eye on the defense, as they should, because year two, Blake Baker, adding all these guys via the transfer portal to shore up that side of the football. I've got some serious reservations about this offense. Again, after losing two big-time tackles, I wouldn't say blowing up your receiving core, because it's, you know, I think in their mind they've upgraded it with transfers. And again, this is another one where they got Garrett Nussmeier, so I think people are like, oh, okay, they're good. Well, not if he's turning the ball over, not if he doesn't have time to throw the ball, not if running is still an issue, which I'm not saying it will be, but it was at times last year. So I got a lot of questions about the offense, and most specifically about the offensive coordinator, Joe Sloan. Is he really up to the task? And will O'Brien Kelly, as the pressure, if they go 0-1, Steve, they lose to Clemson, Brian Kelly's going to grab that damn clipboard and say, okay, Joe, you take the rest of the season off, because my ass is grass if we don't start winning these games. He's, you know, pressure can do funny things to these coaches. You know what?
Oh, 100%. I think Brian Kelly actually called the plays for some of his time at Notre Dame and then handed it off. And I think in this case, I think that's your break glass in case of emergency, right? You know, if the offense starts struggling, Kelly takes over the play calling duties, because you're right. I mean, if you miss the playoff this year with this team after the investment they made, I mean, the questions about Kelly are going to start stacking up down there. But I think you mentioned one other thing, and I think Caden Durham's like almost 800 yards, like 753, probably went under the radar by most people, like in the offseason. And I mean this like in a good way. I think he could be a nice player for this offense to utilize more this year, being able to run the ball, take some of the pressure off Nussmeier. Maybe if the offense has questions, it sort of plays into if the defense is better, you don't have to ask Garrett Nussmeier to score 35 points this week. So there's a lot of different angles this could go. I think if you feel good about quarterback receivers, it's the rest of that equation that kind of worries me, is offensive line, run game. And to your point, how does Joe Sloan and Blake and offensive staff get better this year?
Hey, I'm having a little Cousin Shane moment here where I want to derail us for just a brief second. Shout out Jesus Louise, big Tennessee guy. He says, I like Gunsmoke. He's talking about the old TV show. Steven, are you familiar with old Gunsmoke?
I have not seen many episodes. I do know that if I stayed up late as a kid, it kind of came on late, like after the news. So.
Well, let me just tell you why I hate Gunsmoke. And I never even watched it, but really. But before I was doing this, I was working in TV and film, and I worked at a post-production facility where we had to clean film reels and get the audio off, and essentially just to digitize it for wherever Gunsmoke airs, probably like Paramount TV or Netflix or wherever the hell it's found. But so I had to watch every damn episode of Gunsmoke and get the audio off it. So anytime I see that, I get pretty pissed off.
Doesn't sound like they converted you to a fan and all your
I hate that. Get that garbage out of here. It ruined me.
It's like a special form of torture for SEC Mike to play Gunsmoke on repeat there.
All right, how about how about Oklahoma, Steven? They're risers. Steven thinks they could be the elite. Steven thinks they could suck. Who knows what they're going to do? But what's your biggest question mark for the Sooners?
I am going with the offensive line. Mike, I think there should be a lot of optimism just from having a better baseline of offensive coordinator, potentially better luck in the health department this year. But offensive line, this has traditionally been a strong point under Bill Bedenbaugh. Injuries, transfers, personnel turnover, it all added up last year. So my question with this team is just how much better is this group? Are they up to like SEC standards here? They allowed 50 sacks last year, ranked at the bottom of the SEC in rushing offense. That can't happen. Because if you want this offense to take off, Mateer and Ott are two explosive playmakers. You got to have room to operate. So pretty simple for me. You've added some transfers. You got a lot of guys back. Does experience plus transfers equal improvement? And does that make the offensive line better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I heard this the other day, Steven. I would credit them. I can't remember where they said it, but it was like an Oklahoma guy, and he said they could have the best offensive line in the SEC in the country. And I was like, Bill Bimbo, you know, that I get. I know he's allegedly great, and I'm not questioning him really, but was that just a complete homer take? I mean, certainly they can't be that good, can they?
This piece of paper that I'm holding up on the camera here is actually all my position rankings that I did. Uh-huh. I would not have them in the top five of the SEC.
Yeah. And again, that doesn't mean they're awful. They're bringing back a ton. I think they'll be much improved. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. But mine is similar. It's more about, again, we're getting enamored with John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle bringing over his system over. I'm afraid, Steven, that we're going to reach a point with Mateer. We're like, and again, I'm a fan. I said it as soon as they landed him and I started watching what he did at Washington State, but where he is like so hyped, he's probably overhyped. You know, he's reaching Arch Manning status for me right now, Steven. So again, I hope he's fantastic, but how quickly can that offensive install come together? Which again, it's not going to be new to the quarterback and the offense coordinator. I get that, but it's going to be new to a lot of other people at Oklahoma. And you know, this is obviously important as well, but how difficult will it be replacing some of these defensive leaders like Stutzman and Billy Bowman? That is a secondary question I have, but it's all about the offense, because if as long as it's just not pathetic like it was last year, I think we can, even the biggest Brent Venables, Texas, hating Venables, loving Texas people will admit, if they're being honest, that Brent Venables is one of the best defensive coaches in the country. So I'm not saying Oklahoma's going to be elite at defense year in, year out, but they're going to be very, very, very good probably every year, if that makes sense.
I know that Oklahoma has like some turnover. Obviously, you mentioned Stutzman and Billy Bowman, and you know some of the corner spot at Oklahoma has been one of those things to watch this offseason. But I almost just go, you know, Brent Venables is calling plays. I'm just not that worried about it. It's, I guess, on the offensive side, what would give me optimism if I'm an Oklahoma fan is like, it feels like you just bottomed out last year. It can't be that worse again, right? Like, I mean, it could be, I guess, but I mean, the odds would say like, you're not going to have the bad luck with health and injuries and all that stuff. So I think the floor is much higher. I think if Oklahoma wants to go from like 7-5 to 9-3, 10-2, and be a playoff contender, all those pieces, OC, quarterback, offensive line, have to hit. If they're just fine, they're probably closer to that 7-5 total.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we talked to Oklahoma, Steven, there's a lot of Longhorns in the comments. Let's do Texas next. And before we get to the biggest question for Texas, I mean, you may have blown up your big board. I hope you didn't. I mean, I know you set the Athlon Sports Magazine to the printers, but they have landed a quarterback. Oh, buddy. I mean, confidence shaking at Arch Manning. What can you tell us about this Troy Matthew Caldwell? And should Arch be worried about his job security?
Mike, I don't think he should be worried. I was trying to anoint Arch into like sainthood already, and maybe we shouldn't get him there. I think the biggest reason that Texas picked him up is like it's depth at quarterback. Caldwell's played at Gardner Webb, Jacksonville State, Troy. He's been a pretty solid player. You've got some young depth behind Arch Manning. If something happens, and we saw this last year, Ewers got hurt, Arch Manning played. It's not a bad thing to have depth at quarterback. So I think that's really what it's about here for Texas. It's just adding an experienced arm. And those are hard to find in the portal, especially in the spring. So I think this is more about depth rather than Arch Manning having to sweat out the starting job this fall.
Well, we got a donation. Real quick, let me play a little. Yay, appreciate you, Splenda Daddy, formerly Sugar Daddy. Arch will win the highs. Oh, this is Steven's burner over here. See, I mean, that wouldn't even surprise you at this point, right, if Arch wins the Heisman Trophy?
That's who I'm probably going to pick to win the Heisman Trophy, to be honest with you. So,
The only problem with that, Steven, and this literally got nothing to do with Arch Manning, and this is like the part of college football. There's very little to dislike about college football, but one thing that I despise about it, and it goes all the way back to Peyton Manning. it always comes back to Peyton Manning. But it doesn't matter the year, Steven. You tell me if I'm wrong. Every year, the guy that is like the preseason favorite, people just like pick him apart. And if he has like one bad game or does something poorly, they're like, oh, this guy can't win it. Let's give it to the hot rising guy that nobody heard of 6 months ago. And that happens far too much. It's like whoever the preseason favorite is, they want to like tear him down. And I hate it. So that's the position Arch is walking into.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think it's not only the fact that he has like front runner status, it will also be that the field of quarterbacks coming back this year is pretty crowded. Like, what if Lenore Sellers is pretty special? Cade Klubnik at Clemson, pretty favorable schedule, especially if they beat LSU early. There's a lot of quarterbacks fighting for space in there. But I think typically the favorite would not be the one you want to go with. You want to go with like somebody in that next tier. So that probably doesn't bode well for Arch, which means he's coming back in 2026 to win the Heisman Trophy.
You said tier, but I think you meant to say mutier.
There you go.
Okay, so what is your biggest question there for old Texas if it's not the job security of Arch?
Mike, of course, it's protecting the world's greatest quarterback in Arch Manning, right? 4 new starters on the offensive line. I'm not that worried, but I do wonder how this group is going to gel early in the season. They get Ohio State, of course, they get Florida on the road early. So, protecting your most valuable player is going to be the biggest point of emphasis this season for Texas. I think when you study this group, you've got some guys on the interior, Hudson and DJ Campbell. They're seniors, they're experienced. You got the youth and potential out at the tackle spots with Goosby and Baker. I think this offensive line is going to be fine. I just think that if you want to win a national title, this group is going to have to be pretty solid. And if there's a chance this group struggles at any point, is a weak point in the playoff, it's going to be a real problem. So I'm wondering how good this offensive line is for Texas.
Yeah, and then what little we saw of some of the backups, like when Kelvin Banks got a little banged up last season. I mean, there was no drop off whatsoever. So, I mean, I do have confidence in that group, but that is one that you kind of circle and say, if there is an issue, that's why they were so ready coming into the SEC, was just how good they were on the offensive line. So, that was something that Sarkisian hammered the point home, and that was a big reason why Oklahoma wasn't right, because their offensive line was a train wreck. While Texas, that was a strength. I kind of questioned they lost some guys off the defensive front, but then they just revitalized via the portal, so all of a sudden that's not even much of a concern anymore. So yeah, I have to go offensive line. That's kind of what I was thinking for Texas as well.
Also on the Texas offensive line coming into the SEC, they had a nice cohesive group that had played together for a couple of years to get to that point. Like, they took their lumps and then they got better, and then they end up being one of the best lines in the country. So, you're asking a lot of a very talented group. I think by season's end, it will be one of the best in the country. I just wonder, game one at Ohio State, like I mentioned, the game against Florida, Oklahoma, could there be some bumps in the road potentially? How big are they? That probably decides whether Texas is 11-1 or 10-2 by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. All right, how about Alabama, Steven? Biggest question mark for the Tide entering year two under Kalen DeBoer.
Mike, I think this one's kind of obvious. I don't have a ton of questions about Alabama right now. I feel like the biggest one is the quarterbacks. Who steps up as the starter? And I think you feel pretty good about the candidates, whether that's Austin Mack or Keelan Russell, Ty Simpson in pole position going into the fall. I think the question for me is, they're talented, but what is the upside with this group? And you get Florida State in the season opener. Of course, you play Georgia pretty early in the season. So this group is going to have to just be able to execute the passing game more consistently than they did last year. And I think there's a chance that happens, but do they find their guy and can they stick with him? And is he good enough early in the year? The quarterbacks are my biggest question for Alabama right now.
And this is something that hit me recently, Stephen. I think maybe it was last episode. I can't recall. But have you thought about this at all this offseason, where just look at those first four games at Florida State, Wisconsin, and Georgia? I mean, how fortunate is Alabama that Florida State and Wisconsin are are not the Florida State, Wisconsin that they could be whenever these games were scheduled? I mean, imagine that. If Florida State was like a top 10, Wisconsin was generally a maybe top 20-ish type team, and then Georgia, I mean, that'd be a dang murderer's row in many years. So again, I'm not, you credit Alabama for scheduling these incredibly difficult games, because they schedule them 10 years out. So you just never know how good or bad those teams are going to be. But they're fortunate in that respect. I don't know if you thought about that at all this offseason.
You know, I have not thought about that, but that is a good point, because Florida State's probably not, and certainly not Wisconsin, going to be in the top 25 this year. So they scheduled two showdowns they thought were going to be top, probably 25 games, and it looked tough back in, 2018 or so. And now both of them are out of the top 25. I mean, that's a pretty big break for Alabama with the new quarterback coming in.
Yeah, it is. But all right, sorry to go off topic, because I'm doing my best Cousin Shane here while we can. But I think you missed it, Steve. I think you missed it. I get it, all the quarterback stuff. Biggest question, Kalen DeBoer, come on down. Man, I'm still questioning this guy. All I heard was he was, the next great coach. Some people had him as like number two coach at all college football. And then last year, what did he do? He just, every time he won a game of significance, he backed it up by losing in even more embarrassing fashion. So, and this was, if that happened once, that's a fluke, right? If it happened twice, okay, anybody could lose twice. Heck, even the great Kirby Smart lost twice last year. But, again, Oklahoma was a disaster. That Michigan was a disaster. And we could sit here and blame, Jalen Milroe all we want. You're a head coach making $10 million. You got to put that guy in a better position to make these plays or get his ass off the field. So that was 100% on the coaching, in my opinion. I think Alabama's good enough to win the national championship next year, but not if their coach crumbles under pressure and he can't. I mean, we have seen it many, many times, Stephen, where coach comes in to SEC and, oh man, he dominated Pac-12 or Big 12 or Big 10. And then you get in the SEC, all of a sudden you can't coach at will. So to me, this year's all about Kalen DeBoer and if whether he really is man enough to coach in the SEC.
I think it's important, because by the end of year two, if you miss the playoff twice at Alabama, all that positive momentum from your hire or your strong recruiting fades away really quick. And it becomes the non-believers get very loud, and they become more numerous if you miss it twice there. Because I mean, you brought up a point about last year's schedule. It'd be one thing, like, had they lost to Vanderbilt after beating Georgia. I mean, it still would have been kind of wacky, but Vanderbilt was a lot better last year. But just a no-show against Oklahoma, and then the way they played in the bowl game against a shorthanded Michigan team. Don't want to read too much into the postseason games, but those are just weird results. The Oklahoma game is just one of those games that just make no sense in terms of how the season played out, to see how Alabama was dominated. So I think just having more week-to-week consistency, and maybe that happens now that DeBoer and the staff have a full year of SEC snaps under their belt, and getting Ryan Grubb back to Tuscaloosa is a big deal too.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about we were talking a lot of South Carolina, Stephen. Let's tackle them with what's your biggest question for the Gamecocks exiting spring?
I've got the defensive line here for South Carolina. They were one of the best in the SEC at stopping the run last year. No questions about Dylan Stewart. He's going to be on everybody's preseason All-America list, but you lose the other end in Kyle Kennard. You also lose four key defensive tackles. I know they brought in some transfers, think highly of some, maybe some of the guys developing the program. But I think about like battles at the line of scrimmage coming up for South Carolina. And you think about if you just turned over your entire linebacker group, you've got to turn, you've got some turnover at safety. You've got new interior defensive linemen. Here comes Diego Pavia in week three. You've got Missouri in week four. Like early on in the season, how good this defensive line is and defensive front will be tested. So I like, the biggest question for me is South Carolina reloaded and restocked on the defensive line?
Yeah. Yeah. I think you nailed it, Steven. I went with not necessarily defensive line. I said the whole front seven.
Yeah.
So I love Dylan Stewart. He may be the best defensive player in all the, he may be the best player, excuse me, in the country. Just how I, it's very, 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 very rare that you see a true freshman come in here and play up to the level on the line of scrimmage that he displayed last season. Yet now he's going to have to, you know, be the main focus because, I mean, you can make the case, and I certainly don't want to disrespect Kyle Kennard, but you can make the case that he was so good that it cleared the way for Kyle Kennard to to wreak havoc and win SEC Defensive Player of the Year. I think that's selling Kyle Kennard short. But can Dylan Stewart do it when he's the main focus of every opposing offense? I don't know. So I think the whole front seven is a huge question mark for the Gamecocks. And, you know, if that's a liability, they're in for a rough season potentially.
I do like their secondary. I think their secondary, even without Eamon Worry, could be a, it should be a strength this year. But I think, yeah, I, just given the you know, we mentioned Missouri and Vanderbilt early on, but at LSU, Oklahoma coming in with John Mateer, Alabama, Ole Miss, A&M, I mean, and Clemson. I mean, if as good as Dylan Stewart is, he can't do it alone. So it's a lot of Brian Thomas, you know, and some of the other ends that they have being able to step up and take that pressure off of him. It's as complicated as things are, sometimes it's easy to say, like, the SEC is still a line of scrimmage league and you have to be good here. And if there are questions here for South Carolina, they're not going to make the playoff if this group doesn't get to where they need it to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, anytime we talk South Carolina, Steven, I don't know, these days I think of Missouri next, because what a series that has been. So what's your biggest question mark for South Carolina and Missouri? Had some really tremendous games here, in particular last year was awesome. But what's your biggest question post-spring for these Tigers?
Yeah, man, that Missouri-South Carolina game last year was awesome. I may have to go back and watch that one in the offseason rewatch. I think for me, it's pretty simple. Missouri's schedule is favorable. It really comes down to how good is the quarterback and new offensive line combo. Three new starters in the offensive line. Caden Green, probably going to be on everybody's preseason All-America list. Connor Tolleson, you know, solid center too. They've got a good foundation, but they're going to be counting on a couple transfers. Then you got a transfer quarterback coming in. You got a running back in Ahmad Hardy, who should be pretty good. I think he's going to be one of the top transfers, maybe in the SEC. But last year, Missouri, 3.7 yards per carry in SEC games. If you have some question marks at quarterback and maybe that offense doesn't click, it's going to be hard to run the ball. So offensive line's really going to have to settle in, set the tone, keep guys away from Prabula, and let that Ahmad Hardy and the run game have success. So for me, how good is Missouri's quarterback situation and offensive line?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly quarterback is the big topic for Missouri. So I knew you were going to go there, Steven. So pulling an audible, and I'm looking at you, Kirby Moore, who a year ago, I thought, man, old drink struck gold with this offensive coordinator. He's, you know, he's revitalized the offense. They're doing big things. And the fans are always worried. Oh man, are we going to lose him to the NFL? Is he going to go play or coach with his brother? I don't think they're going to have to worry about that unless it's Drake firing Kirby. If they have a down year again on the offensive side of the football, I don't think Kirby's bad, but last year was something was off. Whether it was Brady Cook being injured, whether it was the level of buy-in not there, the pieces not working, I don't know. But again, that given all the tools that he had to work with. And not like they were awful. I mean, they won 10 games, but they really didn't get the offense going till South Carolina. You know, I mean, not in any meaningful way. So I don't know. Does that linger into this year? That's a million-dollar question that I have with a new quarterback. And so, again, we're all going to be enamored with the quarterback, but I've got serious questions about our offensive coordinator after thinking he may be one of the best in the conference. Now I'm questioning whether he's even going to be around much longer if we continue this inconsistent and up-and-down performances, if that makes sense.
It does, because it was odd to see, I think Missouri finished third in the SEC in yards per play in 2023, and they were all the way down in 13th last year. Like, given the schedule and pieces coming back, I think you would, maybe you don't expect them to just replicate third. I think you kind of expected them to be a top half of the SEC offense, and just the big plays that were missing given some of the weapons that they had. So yeah, Mike, I think that's a good call to say, you know, an offense that was good in year one took a step back, and now you have all these new pieces. What is the staff going to be able to do, given there are now some questions about their ability maybe to get the most out of the talent on the roster at offensive coordinator?
And going back to what we said against Brian Kelly, now I certainly don't think Drink will do this, but you know, that was a big thing for him for years, was like, don't need an offensive coordinator. And I thought that was a big evolution of his coaching, where he's like, all right, there's so much NIL, transfer portal, I'm going to get a coordinator in here. And they took off. If they continue to regress, does he say, all right, sit this one out, Kirby. I'll call the play. You know what I mean? That is not unique to, I mean, that happens time. And I mean, Gus Malzahn did it about every three games. You know what I mean? So, and where does Drink come from? He comes with the Gus Malzahn tree. So, I mean, this is all, time is a flat circle over here. So again, I'm not suggesting that will happen, but it's something to keep your eye out on. How about this, Steven? Something to keep your eye out on. The Florida Gators, come on. What do you make of them this heading into the season with, man, expectations? Florida fans do this every year, Steven, and I love them for it, because I do it too here lately. I mean, I'm on the bandwagon. I think Billy Napier may be a top three or bottom three coach in the league, yet I'm convinced they may make the college football playoff, because I think his roster's too dang talented to not, you know, win 8-9 games potentially. But having said all that, what's your biggest question for the Gators coming out of spring football?
Mike, you might think I'm crazy by saying this, but I think that Miami and Florida game early in the season might actually be pretty important for playoff implications. I don't think if Florida wins that game and Miami's still going to play Notre Dame in the first week of the season, that might be pretty important for positioning later in the year. But I think when I'm thinking about Florida, I am worried still about DJ Lagway's health. But I didn't want to focus all on the quarterback injury, and I wanted to take a look at the defense, because I love what they did late in the season. Held their last four opponents to 13 points a game. Now, you could take a look at that and go, okay, Tulane was shorthanded, Florida State wasn't very good, Ole Miss was a good one, and so was LSU. So I think, given what they bring back, can they improve, and did they take enough of a step forward this offseason to be a playoff contender? Those games early, LSU and Miami, are going to tell us a lot. So my biggest question is, did Florida's defense improve enough to make the college football playoff?
Yeah, I think that is a very important question. And it's my understanding they simplified things at the tail end of the season, and that really obviously helped on something helped on the field. So, I think that's a fair question. DJ is obviously, I think, not only the biggest question in Gainesville, but I think the biggest question in the SEC. Now, if you're like Cousin Shane and you hate the Florida Gators for some reason and you think they can go 6-6, I don't think it matters. You know what I mean? Because you're saying, well, this is an average ass team, and who cares if their quarterback's there? Meanwhile, I'm sitting here saying, man, things break right if the defense, like Steven says, continues to trend in the right direction. If DJ Lagway is 100% and doesn't require the surgery and all that, I think this team could win 10 games and make the college football playoff. And that is, it ain't going to be easy, certainly, with the schedule. But last year we were saying this is the, you know, toughest schedule of all time, and they managed to win 8 games. So Can they do it again? I don't know, but I don't know. I'd be putting the mortgage on it, but I just like I just like where things are trending right now. And again, I think I'm kind of rambling here, but it's got to be DJ. It's got to be Lagway and his health. And I know we've come out and we've seen him throwing the football, so all's good there, right? But I don't know. We'll see. How far can he throw the football? That's to my understanding is the real question. Can he push the ball down the football field? And he can do it as well as anybody when he's healthy. And I certainly hope he can do it. But man, what a game! I think you've got me flummoxed here, Stephen, because you said Miami and playoff in the same sentence with Carson Beck as quarterback. Oh my goodness! He must have a new girlfriend. I know Stephen keeps up with Carson Beck and his love life for some reason. There, but maybe there's something going on there I don't know about. But man, if not for playoff implications for the SEC brand, we need this one, right? Because Miami whooped Florida last year. Man, that would be a black eye for the league if Florida can't beat Miami once out of 2 years. You know what?
Exactly. And Mike, I think when you start thinking about like playoff contenders, I promise I won't preview the entire ACC. Miami's got a pretty favorable slate. They get Notre Dame early. And then Florida, you just kind of think about like they came to the doorstep of the playoff last year. And if they win one or both of those non-conference games, they're probably going to be in the playoff mix. So that game, like if you're thinking about this on the Florida side, you win this game, it's huge for Napier. You build off of what you ended with last year. You get revenge for the blowout in Gainesville. But also I'm starting to think like positioning, like for non-conference games, like head to head is going to mean a lot potentially with a bunch of 10-2, 9-3 teams stacked in there. So I think that game is not only important to figuring out what could happen in the playoff. I think it's important for the SEC in Florida to go get that victory. Because if they do that, then that gets obviously revenge for last year.
And let me ask you this, because I'm not a fan of Mario Cristobal. I do think he is, an elite recruiter. Just so happens where he coaches at two of, or he has coached at two of the most prominent NIL programs. That's probably just coincidence. But how big of an indictment, if at all, is the fact they didn't even make the playoff out of a weaker league, and they had the number one overall pick in the draft? Have you considered that at all?
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, they were like the volatile team. Like they almost lost to Cal. They probably should have lost to Virginia Tech on the Hail Mary at the end of the game. I mean, for a roster that I think they've now had three or four straight number one recruiting classes in the ACC, and the best they have to show for it is 10-3 and a trip to the, it's now the Pop-Tarts Bowl, right? I get confused with the cheese at the Pop-Tarts. I mean, it's not a good indictment that you lose into Syracuse and Georgia Tech. So I think it's an important year for Cristobal too.
Hey, and one more question I've been meaning to ask. I literally don't know who to ask, but you're the perfect person. And this is not throwing shade at Cam Ward. I quite frankly, I didn't watch. I watched him destroy Florida. And hell, I said Florida would destroy them. So I look like an idiot there, like I typically do. But why in the world, and again, this is nothing against the guy, right? Why do they consider his like the record holder for all these NCAA stats when he had 2 years at FCS? Can you give me an answer on that? Again, I'm not saying he's bad. I'm not saying they shouldn't honor him. But since when do they start counting 2 years at FCS where I looked at his stats and like that's where all his gaudy stats come from? Why is he the considered NCAA record holder for yards and touchdowns and all this?
That's a good question. I think it's been that way, like in precedent to count those stats like FCS and FBS. I don't think that's a recent change. It's kind of, it's weird. I know what you're getting at. Like if you did all that yardage in the SEC, it means more than like FCS. Yeah. Did. So I guess as a career thing, no matter where you played at the FCS or FBS, I guess it all counts.
Not to me, it doesn't. Sorry, Cam. You get back here. I will not honor any of your records.
Mike, the weirdest thing still remains like SEC legend Chase Daniel, SEC legend Vince Young. Like these guys didn't play in the SEC, but they're still considered like SEC legends now after all the realignment.
I don't honor that either. I welcome Texas. I welcome Oklahoma. Mizzou, all of them, but I don't honor any of that.
Right. SEC quarterback legend Josh Heupel, right?
No. All right. How about, speaking of Heupel, how about Tennessee? Where's your big? There's a lot of questions here. I'm catching a lot of heat. It's funny. I mean, hell, you could go to a school, you could cover a school, you could donate to the school. You hate the school, Stephen, if you say they're going to not go to the college football playoff, like I'm saying. But what's your biggest question mark for the Vols?
Mike, let me take up for you here for a second, because you know it's hard to get back to the playoff regardless. Like, if Nico was coming back this year, Tennessee, I think most people would pick against them to get to the playoff, given that they have one returning starter on the offensive line. They lost James Pierce, who's a first-round pick, and they lost Dylan Sampson. So I think Tennessee was already a long shot to, and I say long shot, they were probably in that just miss kind of tier for everybody. So I think given all that, no pressure, Joey Aguilar, you know, his expectations to make the playoff, and Tennessee's going to be a front runner. He's coming in this summer. He's got, like I said, four new starters in the offensive line. There's no Dylan Sampson. The receivers are turned over. So my question is, how good is Joey Aguilar in this offense? Because to me, I think when I look at Tennessee's schedule, I see those games, Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. I like Tennessee to be favored in the rest of the games. So if that happens and you can pick off one of those, then you are talking about a playoff team. But I think it's more likely that Tennessee kind of settles into 8-4. There's a lot of turnover, a lot of uncertainty with given the quarterback situation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that is an obvious one, but I went with, kind of Steven's so good at this. So I'm going to piggyback off it. Offensive line, the bread and butter of Tennessee lately, again, much like Lane Kiffin, you know, the Heupel gets credit for, God forbid you say the word Hendon Hooker in front of Cousin Shane, he'll repeat it for the next 26 hours. But, you know, it's all about the running game. And they have turned into a running machine. Dylan Sampson, SEC Offensive Player of the Year, like you said. But replacing those guys up front. And I mean, this is the uniqueness of fandom, Stephen. I would say 70, maybe even 80% of Tennessee fans were like done with Lance Hurd last year. Did not earn the money he was given. Now he's your anchor on the offensive line. Now they all love him. You know what I mean? So it's an off-season optimism. But again, quite frankly, I didn't think he was that good last year. And they didn't think it either. Yet he's our anchor. We got a true freshman on the right side. And then we got to go to the portal for two guys we never heard of. But now that they're Vols, we love them. Sam Pendleton, Notre Dame, Wendell Moe, Arizona. Now, for all I know, those guys will be all SEC this year. I hope they are. But you're going to throw them in there. How good are we going to be at running the ball with all these pieces, moving pieces? And this was even before we had a quarterback change. So to me, it's all about that offensive line. If they solidify that, they can run the football and they'll be able to ease in this new quarterback who will be working with an entirely new receiving corps, by the way. I mean, it's like my cousin Vinny. I don't know if you've seen that movie, Steven, but when his fiance is like, you know, her biological clock is ticking, you know, and he's trying to fight for these people's lives. There's a guy trying to beat him up. They're out in the cabin in the woods. He's like, what else can we pile on this? That is Tennessee's offensive issues. And oh, by the way, Josh Heupel has like seemingly lost his touch the last 2 years. So throw all that together. I don't know how any Tennessee fan is getting mad that we're sitting here saying 8-4. I think if they go 8-4, Heupel may be SEC coach of the year.
Sounds like that video is going to be on repeat in the Tennessee locker room all offseason. Nobody believes Tennessee. Mike's writing them off. I mean, there are a ton of questions here. I think as good or as the reputation is of Heupel and generating offenses, I think it's very easy to overlook that Dylan Sampson and the defense carried this team. And that maybe that is the optimism if you're Tennessee, is that you can sort of run that back. You still have a pretty good foundation on defense. You can probably find somebody to run the ball, maybe not as good as Dylan Sampson, but you know, Bishop, Lewis, Star Thomas, that's a pretty good combo. We'll note, you asked about Lance Hurd, Mike. I was just looking this up. Pro Football Focus graded him as the lowest rated player on Tennessee's offense last year, like in the 40s. So he's got a pretty big gap to fill if he's going to be just like baseline player in the SEC. I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean that just from their grading service, and I think he'll be better this year. But there's a long way to go for this Tennessee offensive line. And Pendleton and Moe fill in really nice at the interior spot. So again, the optimism, but at the same time, a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of questions, how about Auburn, Steven? Where are you going there? Biggest question marks with the fighting Hugh Freezes.
I apologize in advance for being boring with this answer, but how good is Jackson Arnold? That's my biggest question, because I do think the talent level has improved at Auburn, and there was a lot of like self-inflicted mistakes with turnovers and silly mistakes at times that if you just correct those small things, then you're talking about a team that can maybe be a little bit better at the margins, which means you win close games. I just don't know what to expect out of Jackson Arnold. I watched that Alamo Bowl performance against Arizona, and I see the talent, thinking back to the high school hype, and I see all the upside. And then I see what happened at Oklahoma last year, but also knowing that a lot of that was out of his control with the injuries and the offense. So I don't know what to make of this Auburn team. To me, they're one of the biggest wild cards in the SEC, and certainly I think in college football next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. And I wonder if it hurts at all, you know, all this hype that old Deuce Knight's getting.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been talking quite a bit about it. I've seen it elsewhere. You know, it's being predicted. Well, hell, I think I was the first one to do it, but so maybe I'm to blame. But, you know, there's people predicting Deuce Knight could take over at the end of the season. So, I mean, what kind of confidence do you have in Jackson Arnold if your bold take is, well, just wait till you see this freshman takes his job. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, let me ask it to you this way, because, you know, that's like a little double-edged sword there, Stephen. What's better for Auburn? Do you think Jackson Arnold having a good year? I mean, seemingly you'd be like, yes, I'm all aboard for that. But they're all enamored with Deuce Knight. And last time I checked, Jackson Arnold's got multiple years of eligibility. I think he could go pro if he wanted after this year. But will he be ready for that? I don't know. That's very unrealistic to me. But do they want Jackson Arnold to be good, or do they want Deuce Knight to come in and be like this year's version of DJ Lagway? I mean, what do you think is better for Auburn?
It's a really good question. Mike, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but I think the general scouting on Deuce Knight has been that most recruiting people thought he might need a little bit of time to get ready. I think of the quarterbacks that were projected to be like game ready, I think he was a little bit down the list. Now, that being said, it sounds like he's caught up quite a bit in spring ball. I think if you're Auburn, maybe the most perfect scenario would be Jackson Arnold is good enough early in the year, which gives Deuce Knight some time to sort of ease into it. And sort of like maybe like Florida, you can hand it off as the season goes along, like with Mertz and Lagway. Obviously, Mertz's injury had something to do with that. It's a good problem to have, I guess, if you have two good quarterbacks. And if nothing else, if you're Auburn, maybe the insurance policy this year is a little bit better than the options you had last year.
Mm-hmm. Just Auburn is such a unique beast, though. You know what, Steven, where you get enamored with Jackson Arnold when you land him.
Yeah.
And he hadn't even seen the field for you a couple months later. Buddy, we are all aboard Deuce Knight. Jackson Arnold, have you done anything? You know, he may win the Heisman this year. Let's not look to the true freshman just yet. You know what?
Mike, this brings me back to like playing Donkey Kong on Nintendo 64, because there'd be like missions where you have, and this is like, it's like really random, so this will make sense in a second, but there's missions where you get in the cart, like in a cave, and you jump to the next one. That's like what fandom is. Like you jump from like one cart that's going in the right direction. So you'd say Jackson Arnold, then Deuce Knight's on the other one waiting to take you to the next level. So there you go.
No, that's perfect. That's a perfect analogy. There's no other way to say it. Quarterback is huge for the alleged quarterback whisperer who threw all his quarterbacks under the bus. Let's hope he doesn't do it this year with a totally reworked quarterback room. What a travesty that was. Speaking of travesty, how about the end of the season for the Aggies was quite the tragedy here. What's your biggest question mark for Texas A&M after spring football?
I think the easy answer is how good is Marcel Reed, but I actually want to focus on the other side of the ball, and I want to go to the defensive line because they lost three guys who were pretty good. I mean, Shamar Turner, Shamar Stewart, and Nick Scorton, all drafted. They were also eighth in the SEC in conference-only games against the run, and now you're losing your top producers of the pass rush. So I guess my question is the defensive line going to be good enough in the SEC to help this team go from 8 wins to 10 wins and compete for the college football playoff? Also, given their question marks in the secondary, having a pretty good pass rush could really help alleviate some of those concerns. So is the defensive line good enough? That's my question with Texas A&M.
Yeah, and I'm glad you hit that last point, Stephen, because I'm going to go defensive backs. But I love everything you said. Highly, highly touted defensive line. But I think it's fair to say, other than Nick Scorton, even he, I think, tailed off a little bit by the end of the season. But I don't think that defensive line lived up to their potential. Now, it's different NFL. You know all those guys, I believe, got drafted and fairly high. So, you know, they see the talent in those guys, too. But to have that many defensive linemen that go on to the NFL, you'd think they would have been a dominant force, which they were pretty dominant in some games. Like Florida game, I remember they were like game wreckers there. But they didn't do that enough, in my opinion, last season. So that is a fair question for you to have. But for me, I'm focusing on the defensive backs because this has been a huge issue for a while now. And Mike Elko is usually pretty measured, pretty reserved. He remember how heated he was after that bowl game, after that collapse against Southern Cal. I mean, I thought Jay Bateman was fired. I thought his wife was fired. I mean, I thought everybody that was fired on that defensive side of the field, given Mike Elko's press conference here, and he was pointing fingers right at the secondary and saying, we'll get it fixed. So I want to see the defensive backs get fixed. And again, excellent point you made that you need the defensive line to be, you know, up to a very good standard to help out the secondary. But what happens if that defensive line isn't elite? You know, now how good is that secondary? You know, so they're going to be put to the test early and often, I would think. But we have, under Mike Elko, we can't have a defensive secondary this awful. Awful is a strong word, but that bad. I mean, I expect one of the best defenses in the SEC out of a Mike Elko coach team. And not that they were awful, but I mean, I guess Auburn, they were awful. Auburn went up and down the field on them. They couldn't tackle South Carolina. I mean, this isn't the secondary's fault, but Lenore Sellers, I think he broke like nine sacks in that game. You know what I mean? So we've got to shore that up on the defensive side of the football. You went defensive line, I'll go defensive backs. So that tells you that they should be good at linebacker.
Yeah, Torian York, I think it's going to be pretty dang good this year for A&M. I think, yeah, I am curious to know, and I've gotten some mixed like signals on like how is Mike Elko, what exactly, you know, is he taking over the full play sheet, or is he just taking on a larger role and leaving? I thought Jay Bateman might get like Lane Kiffin at USC, just get left out there before they get on the tarmac. On A&M's schedule early in the season, CJ Carr of Notre Dame, I think, will be a good test for this group, but also Auburn's receivers, you know, September 27th, you still have to play Lagway, Taylen Green, Garrett Nussmeier, Missouri, Lenore Sellers, and Arch Manning. So a team with question marks in the secondary, that is a very challenging slate to see how the secondary holds up.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, how about we haven't really even talked Georgia even have question marks these days, Stephen? What do you think, exiting spring, biggest question mark for them dogs?
Mike, I feel like all I do is talk like line of scrimmage tonight, so I'm going to stay with it. Let's talk about the offensive line. Four new starters here, and let me give you a little bit of a peek behind the curtain. In our Athlon magazine, one of the questions raised by opposing coaches was the offensive line. Like, there, a lot of coaches are wondering how fast and how good this group is going to be this year. So I think offensive line with four new starters, first-time quarterback, 15th in the SEC in rushing offense last season. They've got to have better protection. They've got to be able to run the ball. So how good and how fast can this offensive line come together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went with something similar, Steve. Are they going to be elite in the trenches, given all that they're losing here on both sides of the line of scrimmage? And I don't know. I think that's a serious question mark. I mean, Georgia basically is defensive lineman. You now just look at the Philadelphia Eagles, Green Bay Packers, and all across the NFL. It's nothing but dogs there. Can they replace it? And it's still, I know they had Carson Beck, you know, but the fact that they were 15th in rushing in the SEC, I mean, that's just, that is un-Kirby Smart football. we got to get back to that. But and then all those guys, all their linemen, essentially on the offensive side of the football, went to the NFL. So I think short of one. So it's like, man, you had all these talented guys and you still couldn't run the football. What in the world's going on? We've got to reestablish ourselves as the elite trench team in the SEC. And again, we're picking at tiny little scabs here because they went to the playoff, they won the conference, they beat Texas twice. It's not like we're saying they're awful, but you know, how many Georgia fans are happy with beating Texas and winning the SEC and losing to the playoff immediately? The answer is none. That's not the standard anymore. The standard is you won two national championships. Let's win some more, because you as long as Kirby's there, you're probably going to win at least one or two more, you know, depending on how long he's there. But yeah, every year that they fall short of that goal, I think is, but you know, it's not a disaster, but it's a disappointment. And I think that's fair.
Christian Miller probably already should just go ahead and just like find a house in Philadelphia, right? I mean, CJ Allen, maybe too. Good. You know, Elijah Griffin, also the top freshman, you know, coming in. I know they added, you know, somebody in the portal too from Miami to give them a little bit of depth. But it you know, the dangerous thing here for college football is Georgia's got all these new pieces in there. It's like all these really talented guys are ready to step in. Maybe Georgia might be a little bit undervalued this offseason. I think some have forgotten about how turnkey talent this program can be.
Hey, apologies, cousin Steven. I didn't see this till just now. He gave us a donation, Steven, $2. Oklahoma lose at least 5, possibly 6 or 7. Bet it. Could Oklahoma lose? He's got to be a Texas fan, right? Could Oklahoma lose 7 games? Let's play that hypothetical real quick, since he gave us a donation. And again, this is not Steven's actual predictions here, but if Oklahoma were to lose 7 games, what's 7? Is it that final 7 SEC games? Is it Michigan? Is it Auburn? Where are the 7 most likely losses for Oklahoma for cousin Steven?
Mike, I think you have to start with that back half of the SEC slate. I mean, that is a brutal close to the season for Oklahoma. Road games, South Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama. Wouldn't shock me if they're an underdog in those. Ole Miss, by middle of the season, I think will be a lot better. You've got Missouri, also a lot of new pieces, probably going to be pretty good by November. And LSU, which could be a top 10 team at this point of the season. So I think any of those games, and I feel like when you kind of look at Oklahoma's schedule, there's definitely some toss-ups in there. And I think kind of depending on how you feel about 2 or 3 games either decides whether you got them like 9-3 or closer to 7-5. Also Michigan, and I mean the Jackson Arnold Bowl in September is going to be just nuts, crazy, like just the way that game could play out. So there's a lot of tough games on Oklahoma's schedule. Like, I don't think it's crazy if they finish 6-6. I wouldn't pick that, but I think given their schedule, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, and maybe old Venables just collapses. You know what? I mean,
teams that go into the year in the hot seat with a lot of new pieces always worry me about the potential to fall apart if things get tough early.
Right. And then shout out to cousin Bryce Carter. He gave us a donation as well, Steven. Let me play a little ka-ching for him here. Why, as a Hog fan, am I more confident that Arkansas will beat Notre Dame or Texas this season than I am that the program wins 7 games? So for me, I'll let you answer as well, Stephen. But for me, you know, that's a tricky question. But, you know, why is he more confident they beat Notre Dame or Texas? Probably because you beat Tennessee last year, and we know Arkansas has got a potentially elite quarterback in Talon Green, depending on where you live. You know, you pronounce that differently, apparently. But Talon Green, you know, I think he's maybe a top three quarterback in the conference this year. Truthfully, I think he could be that good. So, you know, if he gets hot at the right time, yes, you can beat a team like Notre Dame at home. I don't know about at Texas, but sure, you could convince me of it. I won't fight you on it. But to answer his question, why are we more confident that they could pull an upset than win seven? Well, let's go back to Talon Green. He's been somewhat injury prone, and consistency's not been there. Now, you could, you know, all these guys from, and I'm not saying he's Jaden Daniels. I'm not saying he's Joe Burrow. I'm not saying he's Shane's secret lover, Hendon Hooker. But all these guys, year two, that they take off, right? It's foolish to expect a quarterback to come in and dominate the conference year one. But if they get better, they get more consistent year two. You know, so I think it's fair to look at Talon Green and say, well, he struggled, but maybe I just listed off some of the best quarterbacks in recent SEC history. They struggled too their year one, and they got much, much, much better year two. So I think Talon Green can do that as well. But what's your thoughts? I went rambling there. What's your thoughts on his question? What more confident that they can beat Notre Dame, Texas, but maybe not win seven?
I have a pretty easy, I guess, or simple answer. That's like, it's college football, right? Like, that would be the season. That's the way this goes in college football. Like, it was one upset, and then the season could go kind of haywire. I think Arkansas, like, that schedule for Arkansas is really, like, it's difficult. There's no doubt about it. I think if you wanted to be, like, super optimistic here, Talon Green takes off. The transfers are settling in those gaps on the offensive line and defense. And then you get into a situation where I think they could maybe talk themselves 7-5, 8-4, given their schedule and probably where like the odds makers would have them favorite or underdog. I think like picking off one upset to me is a heck of a lot easier in a game where Talon Green could just go crazy. Like Notre Dame's defense doesn't have an answer for him. He carries them to a win over Notre Dame. But asking them to do that every week is probably a lot, which is why I think they probably settle in at like 6-6 or something this year.
Well, let's stay on the Razorback theme. What is the biggest question mark you have for them after spring football?
I hate to be like Mr. Trenches tonight, but I'm going to go with like, how good is the defensive line here for Arkansas? I know we just, you know, we talked about Talon Green and they've got some new pieces at receiver and, you know, settling in at the offensive line. I'm really not that worried about this group. I think Petrino plus Talon Green equals good things. On the defensive side of the ball, they lost five of their top six defensive linemen by production, including Landon Jackson. So I think, did they do enough in the portal to get this group to like SEC level, average, middle of the pack type conference type stuff here? 10th in the SEC in SEC only games last year against the run. A lot of questions just overall about this group. So how good is this defensive line is the question that's kind of bothering me the most about Arkansas right now.
Yeah, that's fair. But I also, here's the biggest question mark for me, Steven. Who's catching the football?
Yeah.
11% receiving yards production returning. That's dead last. No one's even, everyone else is at least 25%. Arkansas at 11, including Andrew Armstrong, who some reason didn't go drafted. He got, you know, led the SEC in catches and receiving yards. And then Isaac Tesla went in the third round. So, you know, I don't even think Razorback fans, Steven, probably said, oh yeah, Tesla, he's going to be drafted the third round. You know what I mean? Like he was probably underutilized there.
Yeah.
And they lost their outstanding running back as well. But who's going to be catching these passes from Talon Green? Now, the quarterback can make the receivers look really, really good. So I'm not completely doubting him. But for me, it's and I know they've attacked it via the portal and all that. But you know who's catching the ball, and yeah, particularly Andrew Armstrong with him gone. I mean, Talon Green, those two had such a connection last year. You know, does that emerge? Is it more of a committee approach? I don't know. That's That's going to be the big question, I think, for the Razorbacks this year.
Mike, not only that, if you just think about a like last year's statistics, I mean, Armstrong had, what, like 78 catches, and then the next one had 37. So there was, I mean, it was a pretty wide disparity of like who Talen Green was able to count on as number one in the drop-off to number two. I guess maybe the only thing good here for Arkansas is that Ole Miss is week three. Like, you get Alabama, A&M, and Arkansas State to kind of warm up before you get into Ole Miss, Memphis, Notre Dame, Tennessee, which is, you know, it's a tough stretch, but at least you're not starting off the year with Notre Dame coming to Fayetteville or something.
Yeah, and they better not start too slow either. Arkansas State.
Yeah.
That's going to be a, you know, Super Bowl-type game for old Arkansas State. A lot of pressure on Arkansas just to win that one. Speaking of pressure, Stephen, what pressure on Mississippi State to get better this year? What's your biggest question mark for the Bulldogs at post-spring?
I think it's pretty simple, Mike. I trust this offense to be solid, especially if Blake Shapen is healthy. The question for me is this defense any better? I mean, they brought in a ton of help through the portal. They should be deeper. They should be more talented. Every level of the defense, line, secondary, linebackers, I think it's got to take a massive step forward to go bowling in 2025. So you just 7 yards of play, nearly 39 points a game allowed in SEC contest. That can't happen again. How much better? That's the question. So how is this defense any better, and how far along is it, is my question for Mississippi State.
Stephen, that is completely fair. Colbin Hutzler, get the hell out of here. But these are just the offensive linemen they've added post-spring, Stephen. Blake Steen from Virginia, Jaquan Bolden from Purdue, Zacharias Owens from Colorado, Javen James from Maryland, and Brennan Smith from UTEP. If you're adding five offensive linemen, and again, I'm not saying this is going to be their starting five. If it is, they're in real trouble. But the fact they're adding five offensive linemen, that tells me they're not too satisfied with what they saw in the spring on the offensive line. That is one of the biggest question marks for Mississippi State that I have, and the whole thing's not going to work if they can't run the ball and they can't protect Blake Shapen.
Oh, 100%. I mean, as much as we focus on the defense here, the offensive line was a big concern last year and certainly played out that way. I think it's got to be one of the bottom five groups in the SEC right now, especially when you lose a guy like Ethan Miner, who was pretty solid at center, got a lot of two or three starters basically coming back, depending on how you count them. I hear those names, Mike, and I know there's a couple guys who have bounced around quite frequently in that transfer group there, which worries me a little bit. So never a good idea when you're adding that many guys after spring. It probably doesn't make me feel too good about the direction of the offensive line right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about the direction of Vanderbilt, Stephen? The Commodores here, big year, won a bowl game. Everything's back on track, but what's your biggest question mark for the Fighting Clark Lees here?
This is kind of a weird angle to attack this question, but I'm going to go with, is the supporting cast going to give Diego Pavia more help this year? Kind of a weird way maybe to look at Vanderbilt, but I think their defense should be pretty good once again, maybe even better than last year. But we saw at the end of last year, Vanderbilt's offense kind of ran out of steam. And some of that was Pavia's injuries, I think, slowed him. So can you get a little bit more out of Seth Alexander at running back? You got four new starters on the offensive line. You've got, you know, some weapons at tight end with Eli Stowers. Like, is there more? Can they get more out of the receiving core? They had only 8 plays as an offense of 40-plus yards. That was the bottom of the SEC. So that's a lot of trying to piece together, like, multiple play drives. So I think, can you get some help and can you be more explosive in your supporting cast and take some of that pressure off Pavia so that he's healthy in November to do the things that he did early on last year?
Yeah, for me, Stephen, it's all about this defense, which wasn't very overall, the depth wasn't there. And, you know, it's Vanderbilt, so they're never quite going to match up against most of the Southeastern Conference teams. But they did it on offense last year. There's no reason they shouldn't be better on defense. And now Clark Lee is, you know, after taking over the play calling, he's given that up again. So how does that affect them? they can't be as awful as they were at the tail end of the season. I mean, they couldn't stop. You know, they had a big lead on Tennessee. Yeah, LSU, they never stood a chance. But for me, Vanderbilt's defense, they don't got to be juggernauts or anything, but they got to do their part. You know, in that Alabama game, I don't know about you, Steve, but I kept waiting. All right, when's Alabama going to take us thing over? And they kind of did on when Alabama had the football. The problem was they couldn't stop Diego Bavi in the offense. You know, that formula is not going to work week in, week out, 2 years in a row, I don't think, in the SEC. Defenses, they've got to stand up. And again, they're returning more than anybody on the defensive side of the football in the Southeastern Conference in terms of returning production. Those guys have got to take a step forward, given all they return.
Also, Demaryius Thomas, kind of a key cog to that defensive line transfer in the spring. And I know Vanderbilt brought in some guys to help alleviate that loss. But I think asking Pavia, and I think it's dangerous to – I'm never going to doubt Diego Pavia. I just think if you're Vanderbilt, becoming a more like well-rounded team with a little bit better defense, a little bit better help from the offense, can keep Pavia – healthy and better for longer the season, which gives Vanderbilt a chance to maybe try and exceed last year's win total. It's going to be tough. I think just to say, you know, they return all this and teams probably caught on a little bit at the end of last year. But if you can take some of that off of Pavia, that helps get Vanderbilt closer to that.
Steven, we got a message. I think it's specifically for you from Mr. Sip. Be optimistic about his Mississippi State Bulldogs. How dare you, Steven?
I think they'll be better. I'm still worried as about the offensive line and the defense. I think Lebby will find some ways to generate some points. I think their running back group, if you want to like optimism, I think that's kind of underrated too. I mean, Johnny Daniels, Davin Booth, and Fluff Bothwell, that's a pretty dynamic group. Now, whether or not their offensive line can hold up enough for them, but I think if I'm Mississippi State this year, I'm just expecting this team to be more competitive. If you make a bowl game, it's kind of like the cherry on top. I think they should just try to be aim for being more competitive, maybe try and pick off an SEC game, get to 4 or 5 wins and set up a better 2026.
And I like the fact that right out the gate, Steven, again, these are tricky games. They're already being discounted. I think you'll have that underdog status, maybe even against Southern Miss, but certainly week two at home, Arizona State, which just won their conference title, went to the college football playoff. I mean, I think everybody and their mother is anticipating you getting smoked in that game. If I'm Jeff Lebby and company, I feed off that all off season. That's something that can help, I think.
Oh yeah, and this time Arizona State doesn't have Cam Scattaboo to run over Mississippi State's defense. He's in the NFL with the Giants, but that's actually a good spot for Mississippi State. Because you can play, you know, slow play week one against Southern Miss, even though I think it will be kind of tricky to Southern Miss is going to be a lot better, but you don't have to show the full arsenal for Arizona State in week two, and you can kind of surprise them coming into Starkville.
Mm-hmm. All right, last one, Steven. Kentucky, biggest question mark with the Wildcats following spring football.
I hate to go here again, but I've got to go with the line of scrimmage. I don't know what it is with being like offensive and defensive trenches tonight. But Zach Calzada is the biggest question. He's going to start a quarterback. But I think everything for Kentucky, when I think about some of the most successful Mark Stoops teams, it's been the big blue wall. It's been establishing the run. I like their running backs. You know, Jamarian Wilcox and Seth McGowan and some of the other guys they got, they've got a pretty solid backfield going. But it all starts up front. Is the big blue wall going to be effective with all the transfers? And on the defensive side of the ball, they've lost, you know, quite a few names there. Deion Walker, some others relying on transfers there as well. So a lot of questions for me about this Kentucky team at the line of scrimmage, which is where I think they need to win in 2025 if they want to get back to being in a bowl game.
Yeah, I hear that, Steven, but I'm concerned about, you know, this used to be a tough, hard-nosed physical team that was led by the defense. And, buddy, did we get smoked on the defensive side of the football last year, starting with Florida. I mean, Florida put up nearly 50. If you remember that Auburn game, I think Jarquez Hunter's still rushing. He had like 200, maybe 80 or 250. So, I mean, some insane number. Texas went up and down the field on you, and they weren't even trying. And then Louisville, of course, I mean, they just put the hammer to you. That was pathetic. And again, I know they lost some good players in the NFL. You know, behind the scenes, a lot of people are saying, well, they may have cleared out some locker room problems, you know? So there's a fine line there, right? When you got elite talent and they kind of, you know, you're running a country club type mentality with some players, regardless of how talented they are, maybe it's good that some of those guys have left. And I think that is the optimism coming out of Lexington that'll happen. But I got to see it. Brad White, I still got a high level of respect for him as a defensive coordinator. Mark Stoops, you know, he used to be regarded as a really good defensive coach. But, you know, if they don't do it this year, I think that reputation will be severely tarnished.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't just go with coaching here for Kentucky instead of, you know, because I we talked about some of the coaching things here for some of the other teams. And I hate to doubt Mark Stoops, but I think there's got to be a little bit of doubt after last year. I mean, like we've talked about how they were one play away from being winless in the SEC, that game against Ole Miss. And when I look at their defense, I mean, they are decimated with losses in the front seven. I mean, that's normally where you see like the stalwarts for Kentucky's defense. And also Maxwell Harrison, you know, high pick in the NFL draft, gone at corner. I know he was banged up last year, but there's just a ton of questions, and a team that will be veteran because they bring in veteran experience transfers is a good thing. But also you have to wonder how fast is it going to come together? And also, like, realistically, what is the upside for this team too? I think it's a fair question.
It is, Steven. But I have run out of questions for you after going well over an hour and a half here. You got any closing thoughts before we wrap this one up?
How about the Athlon Sports Magazine College Football Preview? Will be out at the end of the month. It's coming up fast, and hope to have some more intel and goodies and details real soon for it.
Yeah, can't wait for that, Steven. As soon as we have information on where people can buy it, we're going to put it in the show notes. And, you know, Steven's breaking his back over here to get this magazine to each and every one of you. So get out there and order it up while you can. But Steven, really appreciate you stopping by, dropping all this knowledge on us. Thanks for all that, and glad to have you back, my friend. Last thing before you go, can you remind the cousins, if they haven't already, how to follow you and how to find your work?
Absolutely. Come check out all my work at athlonsports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at @AthlonSteven, Steven L. CFB, over on Facebook and Instagram. Also on Blue Sky, if you want to come over there and shout at me and yell at me about trenches, we can do that.
All right, Steven, thank you so much. That's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back with Cousin Shane tomorrow night. Same time as always, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. Like, share, get the word out. We really appreciate each and every one of you. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.